privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Dina.
Hello, Visalia.
My name is Dina. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Grateful and recovering.
So my heart's bouncing out of my chest, so just hang tight for a second. I was sharing with Chris, I said, I haven't been in town long enough to know you guys well enough to tell your story, so you're stuck with mine. And I'm hoping that I remember all the key parts. My sobriety date is September 15th, 1992. Through the grace of God, I've got today, and that's what's important. I woke up sober, and I've got a pretty good chance of going to bed sober. That is my second sobriety date. I am a retread. However, I wouldn't suggest that for anyone, because trying to do that first year again is... it's not for the faint of heart. If you want to live a sober life. And I didn't know what that meant back then. I know what it means today, and I choose to live a sober life. And I got to tell you, living a sober life is only a result of me working the steps of this program. I identified as an alcoholic and an addict, but I got here through Al-Anon. I was born and raised in Compton, and born and raised in Redondo Beach. I got sober in Al-Anon in Compton. I didn't know I had a problem. I knew the people around me had a problem, and they were making it a problem for me. And so I walked through most of my life with a lot of expectations out on everyone else. I came from a good home. My parents did not drink to excess, but they were very critical, and I was a midlife child. My brother's 25 years older than I am. And there was no kids in between, so I was basically raised an only child, and my parents were in their 40s and their 60s by the time I was a teenager. You know, it just was a big generation gap, and I never felt like I fit in, is what my point is. Not feeling like I fit in my own family, constantly being criticized for whatever reason. She had a good reason. I felt loved, but later on, if you hear the message of CODA, it all makes sense. But it was definitely a codependent relationship, family and dynamic. It was dysfunctional. Back then, they called it discipline. Today, we call it abuse. We dealt with things at the kitchen table, but if you were the younger one at the table, you really didn't have a voice. And so it really didn't matter what I had to say or what I wanted. It was going to go down their way. And my first sponsor called me precocious, and I had to look that word up because I didn't know what it meant. And it just meant someone who just had her own thoughts and feelings and tried to act on them without much regard for authority or rules or what people thought. It was almost like a very confident person, almost. But in the size of a half pint, a little 5-year-old, that doesn't show well. And so I was constantly being, pushed down and be quiet and don't talk and you're too loud and quit laughing and your laugh is too damn loud and, so yada yada. All I can do is just kind of, I'm going to try not to jump around. So as I grew up, because it does have a little bit to do with my drinking and drugging,
I started getting loaded first. And I don't know if this is a limited, is it limited where we're leaving drugs out of it?
Okay, good, because that's part of the problem. You know, it's all the same. It's an addiction. That's what I've come to learn in my sobriety. So the reason or the reasons I gave myself was what I want to be able to share is that if you're a victim, if you are a sexually abused victim, if you are a criminal victim, criminal crime outside of physical abuse or a physical abuse, if you're a victim, you can heal in this program. I say that because you can heal. The way I healed was through forgiveness. I learned how to forgive in this program. And that's why I kind of share in a general way that I was, a physical abuse victim, a sexual abuse victim, just a morally depraved environment at times. And some of it, after I got old enough, was of my own choosing. So my mom and I didn't get along, go figure. And one night after, her discipline was a little bit more than I wanted to take, I ran out of the house, and my neighbors saw me crying on the curb and said, "God, are you all right?" I go, "No, I'm not fucking all right." He goes, "Well, here, you need this." So he gave me my first, pod, grass, whatever. Well, back then it was homegrown and it was great. I don't know what y'all smoke now, but it's pretty nuts. But back then it did the job. I calmed down right now. I got happier, I got more tolerant, and it fixed the desire to fit in with my neighbor who I wasn't allowed to hang out with. It allowed me the courage to just to take what else I had to take for the rest of the couple years I was in the house. It was easier to get. Spotting for alcohol was a lot harder for me because I was also kind of introverted by then, and couldn't really speak for myself. Didn't know how to talk or ask for anything, and so it was a way for me to get along in the world. It was the solution. Now my parents tried to give me morals, and they, like I said, my real name is Darlene, but only the nuns and the law know me by that name. I go by Dina. And that's where I try to that's who I am. I am Dina. I am not Darlene. But in those days, I had to try and fit into, all this preconceived ideas of what a young girl should be. And that wasn't me. So when I started using and drinking, I found my solution to fit in the house that I was in and be who I wanted to be outside of the house. Since I was a sexually abused victim, not by my parents, by other people, I became very promiscuous because I just give it away. What care? There was no moral code that I was living up to by then. So I didn't, I was very promiscuous. It was just the way it was for me, because I wanted that attention, that love, comfort. I need to identify a little bit with the excessiveness of my drug use and my alcoholism. I within a short period of time, I would say probably a year, I was already drinking. It was spotting became okay. I could do it by then, and I could go ahead and get the drinks that I wanted. And most of the time, it was whiskey or tequila. It wasn't umbrella drinks. I'm not an umbrella drink girl, either.
set me up the Three Kings, and I'll, that's what I'll drink. That's how we get the party started. You know, Jack, tequila, and Beam, you know, it's just, that's how I can get okay in the environment that I'm in. Because I'm pretty sure I don't fit in. And I tried to do my best in school. I controlled it back then, so I got through school, and I drank or used at night. I took lots of pills. And I don't need to explain the depravity that goes through your mind and your heart and your soul as a woman under the influence for those of women who have done that. That incomprehensible demoralization is pretty severe. And you need to do it again. You need it because that's your medicine, and that's how you get out of your self-hate. So it numbs the rest of the world too. The parts that you can't figure out, that you want to figure out, but you just can't. So it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. When I was about 17 to 20, I sold a lot of drugs, and I moved a lot of heroin. And, you know, I wasn't one to carry guns, but I carried a bat, and I knew how to use it. Over a plate and not over a plate. And so it became I became a very suspicious person and violent person. And if you didn't do what I wanted you to do, either you got whatever was nearby thrown at you. You know, just whatever was near me. I was very physically reactive. But that's what I was taught. Okay, that's an important thing to listen to there for me. That's what I was taught. So as I got older, I was introduced to my daughter's father, and you know, my mom and dad liked him a lot. I was 19 years old, didn't really have an interest in being, you know, committed to one person. And so it was a difficult relationship, but we, you know, I had to grow up. I had to figure it out. I had to do it because that, you know, that's what was going on. And he was an active drug user and dealer. And so we played house, you know. We both went to jail. We both got cited for possession with intent to sell. And so those of you that have had that experience, you know what it's like to constantly be looking over your shoulder and unsure what your next step is supposed to be. You know what you want to do, but that's not on the option list. So you're kind of under the thumb, once again, of something greater than you. And I got out of jail, and not once did it occur to me that my drinking or using was a problem. Not once. It's still at this time. So fast forward 5 years, I ended up having a baby. And for the grace of God, maybe that's where my little bit of consciousness came back, a little bit of clarity came back, because then I wanted to be a little bit better than what I was, because I had already started to behave the way people said I was. So, I had already given up on me. But when I had this little girl, I thought, okay, maybe I have a chance to be a little bit better. I know I'm not going to do it the way I was raised, but I'm going to give it a shot. So I stayed sober for 9 months, and every day I said, God, I can't wait to get high. I can't wait to get drunk. As soon as this baby is born, I'm taking 3 days. You're going to have to figure it out. By formula, I don't care. You know, I just didn't care. I didn't make it 9 months. I had to get high. But I tried. You know, I don't know what trying looks like for you, but that's what trying looked like for me. And the incomprehensible demoralization moved right back in. So I lived a lot of my younger life just with my head on the ground, you know, my chin in my chest, just going, don't look at me, don't talk to me, just leave me the fuck alone. And it was very difficult. So, like I said, my problem wasn't me, it was him. It was her. It was it. It was that. It was the money coming in. It was everything else outside of me. And I was losing it. I was starting to really lose it. I couldn't really keep a job. I really couldn't keep my mind on straight. And before I could really do anything about it, my mom and dad passed away in sudden heart attacks, and that threw me on my head hard because I was very dependent upon them, even though they were very critical. And I couldn't step away from, I didn't know how to be an adult with a child, an addict for a husband, and two parents that just passed away, and a brother that was like, wherever, he was somewhere else. All he came over to do was to tell me that I was doing something wrong. So it was very difficult to understand and cope with that kind of pain. So I was loaded and drunk as much as I could be after that. It was the excuse. I guess for me, I can't really glamorize and make funny stories about my drinking and using because I've seen too many people die in this program just trying to stay sober a week. I've seen too many people die just to stay sober a year. Just to stay sober 5 years, 10, 15. I lost one of my best friend's husbands at 25 years. He killed himself. You know, so this isn't a game to me that I can glamorize. This is a life or death situation. It made my life miserable to the point where I wanted to commit suicide and that I even planned it and everything. You know, they didn't have a hotline back then. They had, you know, just someone, your best friend to talk to. Dude, I'm ready to kill myself. What do I do? So it was very winging it. So the relationship was starting to really unravel, and I had the baby, and I'm going, I got to do something. And I was talking to an employer, and the employer said, hey, you got EAP, you know, whatever that meant back then, and you can go to a counselor. So I went to a counselor, told her all about him, and she goes, you need to go to Al-Anon. I was like, yay, go to Al-Anon. So go to Al-Anon, I go, oh, hell no. No way, what do you mean? I got to think about, no, because even Al-Anon talks about correcting yourself. It doesn't talk about correcting the alcoholic in your life. It talks about correcting yourself. That's what these 12 steps are about. And it was very unique to be sandwiched between, you know, some very vivacious black gals and just sit down, sister, you know, and do your thing. And shut up. Don't talk. You know? And so I stayed at Al-Anon for a little while until I started to hear the message. God cleared my ears enough to hear the message. I stayed sober a little bit better, you know. I wasn't drinking every day, sort of. I was drinking while I was making dinner, but you know, I was, you know, and like I said, I wasn't the wino. I drank wine out of the box, but I didn't drink bottled wine. I drank tequila and Jack. So, you know, dinner was whatever, you know, and today people say, I don't know how to cook. Can't imagine why. maybe that's why the marriage ended. No. Anyway, so I
started to hear what Al-Anon was saying, and I thought, okay, maybe, just maybe, I need to cross the hall. I need to go into Alcoholics Anonymous and see what that's about. And absolutely not. That was worse than Al-Anon. There's no effing way I have anything in common with these people. There's, even though you're telling my story, I was in such denial because I had what appeared to be success from my point of view. I had a job. I was married. I had a house. I was taking care of my bills. I had a baby. No one was dying, you know, anymore. And I stopped running dope. Why? That's good, right? That's a move in the better direction. So I thought I was improving myself. But that really wasn't the case up in here. You know, I still had all the thinking of an alcoholic through manipulation, tantrums, violence, ultimatums, lying, stealing, cheating, selfishness, stubbornness, entitlement. You know, I'm really clear what my character defects are. And so I did my best to participate in AA in Redondo, and I just couldn't get it. So fast forward, divorce. Fast forward, moved into Santa Monica. Started going to the Marina Center in Santa Monica, in Culver City. And that was primarily low bottom drunks. So I really didn't fit in. But I heard someone say, look for the similarities, not the differences. And that saved my ass, because then I got to hear what it really meant. I got to hear what was really being said. And second meeting I went to, this gal came up to me, this beach bottle blonde, you know, Sandra Day, bouffant hairdo, all in pink. Named Charlotte, and she wasn't anything like me. And she goes, I'm going to be your sponsor. You don't have a sponsor, do you? That's how she said it. She said it, I'm your sponsor because you don't have a sponsor, do you? And I go, well, you know, that you don't come near me stance. And she goes, I go, no. And she goes, all right, call me in the morning. She gives me her number. And she goes, and if you don't call me, I better find out that all your fingers and toes have been broken. What the hell are you? You know, it's like, you don't know me. You don't know what I'm capable of. You don't know nothing about me. Why are you talking to me like that? She goes, because I love you. You know, I was just spinny twirly, you know, and like most people when they come to their first new meetings, you know, you're just like, wah, wah, wah. But you hear some things, and that's what I heard. And so I called her, and we started out on this journey of sobriety. And I thought I'd jump in. And the first thing she says, don't do anything within your first year. I want you to call me every day. I want you to do the steps. I want you to come over to my house. We have a meeting with the other girls that I sponsor. We're going to work the steps and help you recover. If you are willing to do anything that I ask you to do, if you're willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. I go, sure. Oh my God, had I known, but don't let that scare those of you that are new, because it's worth it, and it's not as bad as it sounds. I started calling her, and you know, I didn't really have a lot of women friends, and so trying to have some fellowship in that meeting at her house was just traumatic. I mean, there were women falling asleep,
sleep, you know, when I talked, there were women going, when I spoke, there was, oh, is she going to talk about that again while I was, I mean, just rough. And I'm like going, Charlotte, I'm, you know, I'd get up and get physical in front of them and, you know, let's go, you know, who the heck, you know, and, you know, I forgot to mention that Charlotte told me if I had any weapons to get rid of them. And so I had to get rid of that bat. And I'm sorry, I do have to jump back a little bit. I was telling you what it was like. What happened is I had a drunken episode during dinner. That's what I was going to say, after dinner. And I passed out in the kitchen with everything on the stove. My husband came home from dinner and the house was almost going to burn down. There was a little bit of a fire going on. And so he threw me in the bedroom, locked the door. Well, don't do that either, you know. And so I proceeded to tear the room apart. I tore down the curtains. I tore the closet door off the hinges. I kicked in the doors, the walls. You know, I became the Tasmanian devil, and in a complete terrified, I can't do it anymore fit. And I ran up against the wall and I slid down and I just go, God help me, I can't do this anymore. Just God help me, I can't do this anymore. I've got a baby, I can't do this. I'm going to kill them or I'm going to kill me. And that's what happened to make me pursue what I was hearing in counseling, to go to Alcoholics Anonymous to find the solution to my problem, which, you know, like I said, I didn't know was my problem. So now we can kind of move ahead because I want to get sober here. I started doing the steps with this lady and these other women and tried to forge relationships with women and did my best to, you know, not create too many relationships with the opposite sex because it just wasn't part of the plan. And after the first couple steps and what I shared with Charlotte, she goes, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. So I went, okay. And I was okay with that. And so I worked the steps to the best of my ability. And that's important. But you have to know something. This program is like peeling away the onion. Every situation that you go through is going to present another issue that you thought you resolved years ago. And it comes right back up and you got to address it again. The good news is the answers are in the book, in the 12 steps, and you can address that problem with the steps the same way you did it before. So I decided to get divorced in my first year. I didn't always follow what Charlotte had asked me to do. I did empty the ashtrays. I did make coffee. I did become a greeter. I did take a service commitment. But, you know, that first step, admitted to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, to the best of my ability, I did that. But I didn't know who I was then really, really well. And so after a year and a chip, I went on the booze cruise in Mexico City, Baja, and got drunk. They poured me off that boat. They carried me off that little thing. And I was wasted. So I get home after a week in Baja, you know, letting my hair down because I just got divorced. Like that mattered. And I called her up. I go, I'm back in town. And she goes, where's the baby? I go, she's back with me. You know, Jasmine didn't go to Mexico, thank God. And she said, how you doing? I go, well, I drank. She goes, fuck you. Get your ass over here. Here she goes talking to me like that again. But, you know, I guess, I don't know if I needed a mother figure. I needed someone that I couldn't talk back to. I couldn't manipulate. That just one person in my life that maybe I could respect. Maybe just one person that I could value what they had to say to me, because I knew it. I knew what I wanted, and I wasn't going to listen to anybody else. I was a rebel without a cause. And so we went back to her house. She goes, look, you need to decide whether you're going to stay sober or whether you're not, and I can't do it for you. And so I want you to go home. I want you to sit with your shit. And I want you to decide whether this is the kind of life you want to live, because I guarantee you that it will be infinitely better than the crap that you walked in here with. She goes, I will refund your misery. No problem. But if you want to stay sober, if you want a different life, if you want to be around to raise your child, if you want to be different than the way you were raised, you better stick around listening to someone else who knows how to do it. Because you don't. You just came back from a booze cruise, drinking tequila out of one of those power squirt guns. You know? Great time, gotta say. But anyway, you know, that's what I'm saying. Drinking wasn't all bad. Sobriety isn't all good. You know, it's life. You know, we learn to live life on life's terms, and that has a little bit more to do with emotional sobriety, but gotta speed it up. So I embarked on the program again. It took me 3 months to decide to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous in the Marina Center and stand up and get a chip and say, I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict and I need help. And I listened to what she said then. Go to meetings. I don't care if you have a baby. Go to meetings. And back in the Marina Center in those days, I could take my daughter, and they watched her while I went to a meeting. And I learned to leave my daughter with people that I didn't know, but for some odd reason, I trusted. And I think it's because we all come here with that same broken feeling. And I got to say, you're not broken. You're so not broken. It's just a perspective that's distorted that you're bringing in here. Give yourself a chance to learn a different perspective, because you're not broken. It's just an illusion. I rather have an illusion and a delusion about that sort of thing than about my alcoholism. I'm really clear about my ism. I'm really clear about how this disease will see me dead any day of the week, twice on Sundays, because it can. Not because I want it to, but because it can. Because the way I perceive things is usually a little fucked up. So I stuck around in sobriety in Marina Center, and at 4 years sobriety, I ended the relationship. My daughter's doing good. We're doing great. I got a job. Everything's going good. I meet another guy in the program, has about 7 years more than I do. Think it's all good. I follow him to Phoenix, Arizona. I wasn't going to stay 20 minutes. I ended up staying 20 years. It was the right decision for my daughter and for my marriage, but it wasn't the right decision for me. I'm still under somebody else's thumb. I'm still having to feel obligated and listen to someone else's rules and listen to someone else's input, and I don't want to. I'm still trying to learn the right message for me. I'm still trying I shared last night, I'm trying to have my gut and my boundaries walk at the same pace. You know, my gut was, I know I shouldn't go, but I don't know how to say no. I know how to say no, but I don't know how to, my gut says be nice. You know, so I was just off. I was just off balance. So I started getting sober I stayed sober in Phoenix. And this part is really important. And I got like 5 minutes, something like that. Yeah. Okay. All right. This part's important. 7 years sober, working the program, sponsor, sponsee, GSR, God, greeter, secretary. Marriage on the rocks, daughter doing great, and I'm putting a gun in my mouth. You want to know why?
that first fucking step. I had to admit to my innermost self that I cannot drink or use safely no matter what, no matter whether I think it's a good idea, whether I think it's a bad idea. It's not for me. I can't do it. I had to admit, I started to question whether I earned my seat in here. As if. I started to question, you know, what you guys were saying, because I never really qualified you as an important person in my life. You know, I never really gave in 100% that I cannot drink or use or depend on my own thinking without the aid of a power greater than myself. And so I ended up in the insane asylum. And it talks about that in the big book. Death, insane asylum, I just drew a blank, but you know. Sorry, my heart is still pounding a little bit. Jail institution. We've been to jail. Institutions or death. Well, I only got one left, folks. I only got one left. And so I had to spend some time in the psych ward, 7 years sober, and really take a look. So I read the 12 and 12 again, because that ended up being the book that could talk to me the most clearly. You know, the big book, you know, is on a jag and, you know, has a lot of 1930, you know, slang words that threw me off. My first sponsor made me have a dictionary around everything we read so that I'd understand exactly what I was reading. And I get out of the institution, and I'm pretty shooken up, pretty fucked up, and I needed more help. And it talks about that in the big book, that you, if you need more help, you should seek it. You should check it out, whether it's religious people or whether it's doctors or whatever you need other than, you know, drugs or alcohol. And that doesn't mean, you know, becoming your own pharmacist either. That, you know, that means relying on those who have been educated to help people in the, like us. And so I seeked out people like that to get sober, to continue my sobriety. Make a long story short, that's been a really long road, but I'm there. And I'm really happy that I'm sober. I wouldn't want it any other way. Now, the other thing that's important to say is drink day does come. It's come 3 times in my sobriety. And it was in both times it came when I thought everything was cool. But see, that denial, you know, not really looking at things 100%, not being 100% honest with my sponsor, holding back. I was only holding back my recovery. I wasn't holding back my recovery and my ego. I wasn't holding back health, happiness, joy, freedom. That's what I was holding back. Sorry. You know what I'm saying? It can get convoluted. And so I jump back into service. And, you know, that's how I started to be able to live a life that was happy, joyous, and free. You know, I still get nervous. I still get confused. I moved here. It's going to be a year in May. I've been welcomed by some beautiful ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, you are gentlemen and you are ladies. And I enjoy the you know, the tassels that come around, because they're real. You know, I want things real. I know what it's like to live a facade outside sobriety and inside sobriety. I had to grow up. I had to pursue emotional sobriety, learning to cope life on life's terms, you know, not throw that temper tantrum, not throw that, you know, I'm going to be in your face if you don't straighten it up, you know, I'm going to throw something at you, you know, that violence, that just blackout, that emotional blackout. And I found all my answers in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I don't know if I've covered everything that I really wanted to say, and I asked God to share, help me share what needed to be heard. So I hope that someone heard something that will help them keep coming back. Just stay. You don't have to in and out. You don't have to be a retread. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I haven't seen anybody come in tell me it was better. And what's really cool is that AA here is just like AA anywhere else. You know, I was able to get a chip in Ireland and in Italy. You know, this girl wouldn't have been able to say that when I got sober, that I'd get the opportunity to travel and learn about things that really do interest me. You know, I was just trying to make money, trying to move the dough, you know. So I'm grateful for the steps and the recovery that's offered through Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, HANACA. You know, this is where crazy belongs, so crazy can get straight. You know, I don't have to wake up in any kind of self-hate anymore. I learned to love myself and to love you. You know, I learned to take you as someone who's trying to heal. Maybe you don't always know how to do it right just yet, because I didn't. And I thank you, Visalia, for welcoming me here. I'm really humbled to have this, and I hope I never take it for granted. And I hope that if you see me out there, you just say hey in a peaceful way, because it's all good. You know, we have the roadmap, we have the instructions. The big book and the 12 and 12 are the instructions for out there. God knows somebody needs to be following him. Thanks.